You're listening to Greater LA from KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Spoiler alert, the U.S. men's soccer team has its first result at the World Cup in Qatar.
Pulisic on the run, Pulisic has Weah, Pulisic rolls it in, Tim Weah!
Yes, the Americans scored in the first half, but in the second they gave up a penalty, and the game ended in a 1-1 draw. It all kicked off this weekend in the tiny nation on the Arabian Peninsula, and for the next 4 weeks, the top players and fiercest rivalries will play out for an audience of literally billions of global viewers. That includes Southern Californians, even if you have to get up at 5 a.m. to catch some of the games. Well, here in Greater L.A., in honor of the once-every-4-years World Cup, you're going to hear a story every week about the world of soccer, as represented right here in Southern California. Today, a story about the supporters of L.A.'s newest men's pro soccer team, the Los Angeles Football Club. Well, many LAFC supporters come from south of the border and have brought the love of the game and their fierce football loyalties to L.A. But when it comes to the World Cup, and nations pitted against one another, the old ties are hard to break. KCRW's Bob Carlson, LAFC fan and host of the Unfictional Storytelling podcast, tells this tale.
Just weeks before this World Cup began, on November 5th, there was a soccer game in downtown Los Angeles that a lot of people in the city didn't even know was happening, but it was called the greatest game in the history of Major League Soccer.
Life is not fair, you know? Soccer is not fair.
This is Julio Ramos of the District 9 Ultras supporter group of LAFC.
Sometimes soccer, you can play the best game of your life and have 25 chances a goal, and they only have one chance, and they score, and they win, and you're out, you know?
It was the finals of the MLS Cup between the two best teams of the year from the East and West, the Philadelphia Union and Los Angeles Football Club, LAFC. It was a hard physical battle, and the score was 2-2 after 90 minutes of regulation. Game went into overtime. And then with just 4 minutes left in overtime, LAFC goalkeeper Maxime Crapeau came out to intercept a Philadelphia player on a breakaway.
What does Ismael Alfaf do?
They collided, and Max fractured his ankle. On the TV broadcast of the game, you could see Julio Ramos watching the game sadly from the front of the LAFC supporter section.
I was heartbroken, man, you know, regardless of the game. When Max Crapeau broke his leg, the players become family, you know. He's like a brother to me. And in my head right away thinking, man, he put his life at risk for us. And not just that, you know, that he was 15 days away from playing his first World Cup.
Max had been on the World Cup roster for Canada. As they drove him off the field, he gestured to his teammates to keep going. Don't give up. And he gave the crowd a thumbs up as he went into the stadium tunnel.
I remember Max sitting up and saying, come on, guys, let's go. So that gave me the power to start screaming at everybody, come on, it's not over yet. Let's not give up. Come on.
Julio Ramos is a capo for the 3252 LAFC Supporters Union. That means most games Julio stands in front of over 3,000 supporters in the north end of Bank of California Stadium. People from all parts of Los Angeles chanting, singing, drumming, on their feet the whole game.
It's not over yet, you know, and so everybody started reacting to that. As a cop, that's your job. Hey, it's not done, trust me. It's this our cup. You gotta keep chanting.
On the play, Max Crapeau was given a red card for impeding the Philadelphia player. LAFC would now play a man down, 10 men to Philly's 11, with their backup keeper in goal. A few minutes later, Philadelphia went ahead, deep into overtime.
Jack Elliott! Philadelphia takes the lead!
And this was the moment when LAFC fans like me, watching the game at home on TV, started to wrap our heads around the sick feeling that we were about to lose this game. Like Julio Ramos said, soccer is unfair, life is unfair, and as exciting as the wins can be, the harsh reality of losing hits you even harder. The pain of soccer is as much a part of it as the joy. It's probably a bigger part of it. Back at Bank of California Stadium, Julio Ramos was looking over at his kids.
I look in the stands and I look at my 18-year-old and my 15-year-old, crying of pain, you know? And for me, it was a moment of sadness, but also a moment of pride. Pride because I was like, man, you know, my culture, it's now under blood. Now they feel it, they love it the same way I do. And, you know, 2 minutes later, 1 minute later, you know, we score the equalizer. And it was such an amazing moment, you know?
Hillier to Palacios to the byline. Palacios clipping it up.
Aging Welsh superstar Gareth Bale tied the game for LAFC. Overtime ended in a 3-3 tie. Now the game would be decided by soccer's own version of Russian roulette, penalty kicks. Each team has five players to take a direct shot on goal. Best of five wins. In theory, it should be easy for the shooter, but these things are decided by who's the best goalie on the day. Philadelphia had the MLS Goalkeeper of the Year in their goal. LAFC had backup goalkeeper John McCarthy. Just before the kick started, John McCarthy was standing in front of the supporters of the 32-52. He was just a few feet away from Julio Ramos, who was holding a megaphone.
McCarthy was like very close to me, and I got my megaphone and I told him, listen, my boy, this is not a coincidence. What happened today is not a coincidence. This is destiny. This is your cup. You're going to give us a cup. This is destiny for you to be the one that is going to give us the championship. And it happened, you know.
McCarthy blanked Philadelphia on their first three kicks, while LAFC scored two. And now they only needed to bury the last one to win the game and the championship.
Can win MLS Cup for LAFC with this kick. Yes!
LAFC backup goalkeeper John McCarthy was the game MVP. It was incredible.
I'm a person that loves the culture, and I believe in the guts of football and all those things. So, you know, it was not a coincidence. That way we won the championship, it was destiny. It was meant to be, and it was meant to be that way so that we can enjoy it more, so that we can say, wow, wow, you know, we're champions.
The reason Julio Ramos believes in the gods of football is because he grew up in a football church.
What is your earliest memories as a football fan?
I was probably like 5 years old. My godfather, he used to play for Chivas Guadalajara. He was the assistant coach. So he took me to the field of El Estadio Jalisco, and I was part of the picture, you know, the team picture. I will never forget that. It was an amazing experience. I remember the roar of the stadium and the excitement, you know, that I felt for being on a sacred field of El Estadio Jalisco, you know.
He was born to be a supporter. He was even a member of the junior supporter group.
It was called La Porra Infantil de Señora Vallejo. So it was like a supporter group for little kids under 14. And I was always there supporting my Chivas, you know. They're the love of my life. But unfortunately, you know, it's something that I only get to watch on TV.
Like a lot of Mexican-Americans who grew up with the team, Julio watches his boyhood team from afar. But he's transferred a lot of his passion to his new home team, LAFC.
I love them the same. To me, like I said, one is the love of my life. One is the one that taught me how beautiful football is. How it's not just a sport, how he has become a culture, a family, a religion. And that experience, I brought it to LAFC. It's a beautiful feeling. You know, I always tell people when they try to clown me, like, there's no way you can love two clubs. It's only one. I'm like, no, bro, I have five kids. And I love them all the same, you know? So don't give me that crap.
LAFC has grown an intense level of support that's rarely seen for an American team. They've tapped into the deep roots of the sport that were already a part of the city.
Football culture here in Los Angeles has always been here, man. Always been here for decades. It's something that have always existed through us, the immigrants. You have the culture from Mexicans, from Central Americans that love football, that love soccer, Europeans, and the passion for football has always been here.
It's a passion that ties into your identity. You feel connected with the values and fortunes of the club. Julio's group, the District 9 Ultras, and other supporter groups worked with LAFC to build a team fan base that was fed directly from the generations of passionate fans, many of them immigrants who are already living here. They've built a culture around their love of the team and the city of Los Angeles. But when the World Cup comes around, that's a different story.
If they don't play Mexico, I mean, I'm cool rooting for USA. I'm like, all right. Yeah. But when it's Mexico, USA, it's 100% Mexico, you know? I would wish and hope that USA wins, but not against Mexico.
Like most Mexican fans, Jose Salcedo follows the national team closely.
I was born in Mexico. I was born in Mexico in 1981, Zamora, Michoacan. I was raised here in the United States. I came here when I was about 12, 13 years old, right in the middle of the World Cup 1994 when we landed here. I mean, football, soccer, to me, it's part of my DNA. I mean, I will not be able to live with it. And that's 24-7. My life entirely involves around the ball.
We're standing in a storage shed full of two of Jose's collection projects. On one side of the room is his impressive display of Adidas sneakers.
First off, this is a dream come true, right? I'm an Adidas shoe collector. So my storage here, it's the shape of an Adidas box. Painted with the stripes on the side, full of shoes and full of jerseys. So this is like my little Disneyland.
On the other side of the room are over 100 soccer jerseys, mostly Mexican team jerseys.
So it's a game, you know, you're hunting for the shirts on eBay, different websites, you know, you're constantly looking for people in Mexico that might collect, that they might have extras, and then I purchase from them, and and just like that, it came out to be over 100 jerseys. LA is a melting pot. You know, people that are here that love the sport, it's because they have it in their DNA from their country.
My family's from Guadalajara, like I said, so a bunch of, like, half of my family goes for Chivas, and the other half goes for America, so they're rivals, they're basically rivals.
Eric Duenas is a player for LAFC. He was on the podium as the team raised the MLS Cup trophy the other week.
I started when I was 4 years old, I started playing. I went to my dad's game, and I feel like that's where I fell in love with the sport, I guess.
Eric is almost a living embodiment of LAFC's connection with the community.
This is the team that it's always going to have my heart because I grew up here and I'm from LA. This is where it all started for me.
He came up through LAFC's youth system, beginning when he was just 12 years old.
Yeah, it was awesome. There were some times where I even got a chance to be like a ball boy. My dad's a supporter, so I am too. I'm a very proud supporter. So there were some times where I would even be in the 32-52 screaming and chanting with everyone else. So it was amazing. It was an amazing experience.
Eric Duenas became the first Academy player to be signed to the first team. And he also was invited to camp with the Mexican national youth team.
I went to two camps over there in Mexico City. And it was a great experience. My first two ever camps in the Mexico national team. Any Mexican has the honor to represent Mexico, and they will represent Mexico with pride and with all their heart.
Julio Ramos thinks it's a common thing for young generations of Mexican-Americans born in the U.S. to still root for Mexico.
For example, you can ask my kids, and they don't go for the U.S. national team. They support Mexico. You grow in that atmosphere to the point that even if you were born here, you know, you feel the pride and you feel proud to represent El Tri. There's a lot of us that cannot go to Mexico and enjoy the national team, you know, or cannot go outside the country to represent Mexico. So it's a sense of pride. To me, Los Angeles is a world city. So you have people from all around the world. You know, Armenians, they love soccer. They love football. Koreans, they love football. You go Mexicans, obviously we love football. Salvadorians, people from Guatemala, Honduras, you know, Colombians, Argentinians. And then you go to the Europeans. I got friends from Ireland, from Germany. Football, the sport that everybody knows around the world, is so strong in Los Angeles, more than any other city. Football is like music, man. It's a universal language. And football or soccer is more than a sport. It's a tool to change life. It's a tool to help people. It's a tool to create. It's a tool to make it a culture, a religion. And soccer has a power of stopping wars and saving lives. It's more than just 90 minutes on the field. It represents way more than that.
By the way, that story comes from KCRW's podcast called Football Confidential, Stories of Soccer in the International City, Los Angeles. You can find more at kcrw.com.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Thanksgiving is a time for getting together with family, and for many of us, family includes our beloved pets. But sadly, some dogs and cats are not so lucky this holiday season in Orange County. The county-run shelter OC Animal Care is coming under fire for what activists describe as abusive practices, overuse of euthanasia, and efforts that come up short in helping shelter animals find forever homes. After community meetings and protests failed to motivate the county to act, a trio of animal rights organizations have decided to sue the shelter to end what they call a killing spree. Gustavo Arellano is columnist for the LA Times and back, of course, with KCRW's Orange County Line. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
We're going to get to the OC Animal Care in just a moment, but first I want to update a couple of important Orange County election results in Santa Ana and Anaheim. And you've got some results and you've got some analysis.
Oh, yes, I do. We'll start with my hometown of Anaheim, where this year the FBI announced a major investigation into what they themselves called the cabal that seems to run City Hall. And so because of that, there was an anti-establishment feeling among voters, but they ran into Disney and the much, much money that they give for their candidates. Two of their candidates won, Natalie Meeks out in Anaheim Hill, and then Natalie Rubalcaba, who actually I went to high school with, but they beat more progressive candidates. And then there was one candidate that was a little bit more progressive, Carlos León, and he's currently in the lead. But the big race was the mayor's race, and Ashley Aiken, who ran in 2018 and lost, she won decisively over incumbent council member Trevor O'Neill. He's not accused of any wrongdoing, but he was definitely part of what is considered to be the cabal.
So Ashley Aiken has won and is set to be Anaheim's first female mayor. What can we expect from her in that role?
Yeah, so Ashley's kind of in the middle between moderate Democrat and progressive. So she's not a straight up progressive like some of these other people that I mentioned, but she's definitely has criticized Disney and its overreach in, or what she says is the overreach into city politics. She does, her dad, Wiley Aiken, is alleged in Democratic Party circles. And so it'll be interesting to see, though, because she is in the minority. The majority of the city council, even though there's other Democrats there, are going to be more moderate Democrats. And the other big race, Avelino Valencia, who is a sitting council member, he ran for assembly and won. So now either the city council is going to pick his replacement or it's going to go to a runoff. I think the city council in the past, they've preferred to pick a candidate. So that's probably what's going to happen. We'll see if it's going to be a Democrat or a Republican, but it's definitely not going to be a progressive.
So Orange County continued to look purple this election, Gustavo. Santa Ana is one of the bluer parts of the county, but there's been this fight there for city council seats between progressives and candidates backed by the police union, right? What's the latest?
Oh, yeah. Over the past 3 to 4 election cycles, the police union has spent a lot of money on mailers to try to get candidates who they perceive to be friendly to them, to the point where a couple of years ago, they recalled 2 incumbent council members. But in 2020, you had a revolution. You had a bunch of Bernie Sanders supporters. They got elected to the city council to make a majority. One of them, Vince Sarmiento, ran for supervisor this time around against a fellow Democrat. He won as a supervisor, but his replacement, Valerie Amezcua, she was supported by the police union. 2 of their candidates actually won for the police union. So it all hinged, the majority, the burner majority hinged on one race between the incumbent Nelida Mendoza and Ben Vasquez, who is a teacher at Valley High School at Santa Ana, and full disclosure, a good friend of mine. So Ben was losing starting on election day onward, but right now he's currently in the lead. The lead is less than 100. So all the results are starting to go his way, but nothing has been called. But if Ben wins, then the progressive majority of the city council stays.
All right, let's turn to the OC Animal Shelter story now and the recent lawsuit. Why are these animal rights groups suing? What do they say is wrong going on over at OC Animal Care?
So the animal shelter has been plagued with controversy, geez, for at least 20 years. A grand jury has done multiple reports on it in the past. I remember when I started off as a reporter, I was doing a little bit on what they were accused of. In this most recent one, what animal activists are saying is that the animal shelter, OC Animal Care, is euthanizing too many pets, is not, and more importantly, though, is not making it easy for the public to be able to adopt animals.
And that's like going through an appointment process. It's not open to the public, right? You have to go through an appointment process to get there. And yes, you also have to look at pictures before you can even see the animal up close.
What the county is saying is that because of the pandemic, they really try to make things as safe as possible. So if you have to set up an appointment, then you see the animal through a photo, and then you could set up a little play date right there and then. But what the critics are saying is that this is making it way too difficult. And the numbers prove it. In 2019, the animal care had about 7,000 adoptions. 2020, of course, because of the pandemic, it dropped dramatically. But the numbers really haven't improved since. I think through the first half of this year, there was about 1,700 adoptions. And so what the critics are saying is, because if you don't adopt these animals, well, they're going to get euthanized.
It should be noted that Andy Bernard, who's the county shelter's director, has gone on record saying that she's willing to reconsider or at least consider some of the recommendations, but hasn't said anything more about it. That was in the Voice of OC, right?
Yeah. One of the things that they said is like, oh, we're going to set up like open dates to the public, you know, where you have like a little fair and people go check out these different animals. But again, when you have officials saying that, a lot of the animal care activists or people who just love pets here in Orange County, they're really viewing it skeptically because they can easily make it easier for people who do want to adopt animals to do so.
Well, how do you do that, by the way? So if someone's listening to this right now, they know exactly what to do if they want to get one of those animals out of danger.
I mean, right now, literally, if you want to go at least through OC Animal Care, you have to set up that appointment. Do that, though. I would say this, again, as someone who has two rescued dogs, like, poor pups, they're going to just die if someone doesn't go out and care for them. So if you really want an animal, you know, I'll be Betty White right now and say, like, if you really love animals, go out there and make that appointment. Go through those extra hoops, but at the same time, push OC Animal Care to make it easier for people to be able to adopt.
And again, lawsuit ongoing. We'll keep tabs on that. OC Animal Care has links on their site that we'll include on our website as well, along with the links to the three groups that are suing. Gustavo Arellano, columnist for the LA Times, of course, every week here, a regular on GLA. Gustavo, thanks.
Gracias.
That's going to do it for us this evening. Tomorrow, another update from Orange County and the Anaheim School District that's been turning all the schools they can into community schools and investing in them for several years. An update tomorrow on this program. KCRW.com/GLA is where you can find us online. Tell us how you're doing. Share your thoughts with us. Maybe a story idea. While you're there, subscribe to the podcast as well. KCRW.com/GLA. Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all had hands on this evening's show. I'm Steve Chitakis. Thanks for your time and attention. Have a great night.